Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Atsuri fan. Getting a semi was beyond our expectations, but we persevered and surprised even ourselves. Now we're just minutes away from the climax. But we've gone intimate with this Atsuri side, and only 11 Spanish men stand in the way of a hot encounter with destiny, and maybe our ultimate fantasy, on this episode of Scudetto. Hello and welcome to another Scudetto Euro special. And we're in the semi-final, boys. Starting to look very much like this podcast could, in fact, go the distance. So, very much enjoyed watching the quarterfinal. A lot of happy Italians and one unhappy Belgium Friday night. Italy obviously taking it 2-1, so we'll be reflecting on that shortly. And looking ahead to the big game with Spain tomorrow. And we've got a very special scouting report from our friend, the Spanish journalist, Angel. But first, let's catch up with the squad. Boaz, how are you doing? Have you had a good week so far?
Yeah, it's been a pretty good week footballing-wise and in other aspects too. My story for this week is that I have a beer-related injury from Saturday morning. We went to the beach with a bunch of friends and someone asked me to pop open a bottle of beer for them. And so I used the classic clipper lighter trick. And as I popped it, for some reason, I've never seen this happen before, but this top flew off like it was a rocket and hit me on the lip and then on my eyebrow, and it could have been dangerous. So yeah, be careful, kids out there.
I always find with a light, if it's like there's a longer edge on the lighter, if you use the longer edge, you always get more like distance on the pop. Is that what happened?
I think this bottle may have been left out in the sun a little bit too long, and so there was a lot of built-up pressure. And unfortunately, my face was what suffered.
Yeah. Well, speaking of beer, what have you got for us this evening?
I've got a Kipling South Pacific Pale Ale from Thornbridge again. They make exceedingly good beers, apparently.
Good stuff. That's not one of you haven't cracked into the case yet, have you?
I'm slowly working through beer. I've now got maybe 18 beers. We should be covered at least until the final, if not. If we do a few specials, I'll still be fine.
We can do a week-long party, daily podcasting if Italy win. Although, yeah, maybe I might find that a bit difficult depending on who they play in the final. Anyway, Kenny, how has your week been?
Yeah, my week's been good. Unfortunately, here in Edinburgh, we haven't been basking in the sort of weather that you guys have been enjoying. We had sort of monsoon rains yesterday and flooding all through the streets, but managed to escape the worst of it where I am. Other than that, just enjoying the football as both of you have, I know.
Yeah, we've definitely been enjoying it. Did you get a chance to have a beer with the game on Friday night?
Did I on Friday? Yeah, I'm sure I did. I didn't actually jot down what I drank. Unfortunately, I don't take notes on my beer drinking on a daily basis.
Christmas present for you. I'll get you like a beer notes notepad. Anyway, what have you got for us tonight? Anyway,
tonight I've got a Cloudwater Soft and Juicy Session IPA, which I've had before, and it's very good. How about you, Oscar? How are you doing, and what are you drinking?
Yeah, well, I've fallen back on the Sauna beer, the Tanker, which I've had many times. But the reason for this is because I played seven-a-side football this evening, and then I had like an hour to get from that to 11-a-side training and then record the podcast.
Absolute maniac.
Luckily, I had the presence of mind to stop in the corner shop and pick up some beers, because if I'd waited till after the training, it would have been illegal to buy beer in Finland.
So you showed up at football training with a bunch of beers?
Yeah, but they're in my bag. No one knew about it. But yes. Anyway.
And you've had a good week?
Yeah, I've had a good week. As I said, I really enjoyed watching the Belgium-Italy game with a load of happy Italians and one frustrated Belgian. And
you're allowed to crow a little bit about England as well if you want. This is your chance. This is your one chance. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I was had an enjoyable Saturday evening watching the boy Harry Kane get back to some form. But as we were saying before, not overly confident that it will be England in the final. I think Denmark a difficult prospect, definitely.
But you've just beaten the mighty Ukraine. I mean, you're world beater. It's coming home.
Look, I'll save it for the scouting report if and when that is required. But I think Denmark have had a very good tournament. They're a very dangerous opponent, and if England underestimate them, they could very well come unstuck. But that's enough about that. Let's talk about Italian football. Because I think this, as I've just said, I very much enjoyed watching this game. Probably the most enjoyable game of the tournament for me so far. What did you think of it, Kenny? Probably the best game you've seen?
For me, hands down, I think the only game that came close to it in terms of just like sheer intensity and quality really was France against Germany. That's the only one that I can think of where it was, it kind of reached that level. And I mean, we just have to say how brilliant Italy were, because I think I had them as slight second favourites going into this. I wouldn't say underdogs, because I've been raving about Italy since before the tournament started, obviously. But definitely there were fears that this would be the end of the road. But yeah, just Italy just seemed to choke the life out of Belgium, really. And it was really interesting to see those different styles of play, because I think you would typically associate the sort of game that Belgium played with more of an Italian sort of traditional or the stereotypically Italian approach, whereas Italy were playing, I mean, they looked as good as that great Spain side or the great Germany side of the sort of past 10 years or so. It was really, really entertaining. And Belgium could have, let's not forget, Belgium could have equalized in this one as well. So it wasn't like it was a walkover by any means, as you would expect against that sort of level of opposition. Just a really, really great game and incredible performance by Italy.
Yeah, definitely. And Buzz, what did you make of it? There was a lot being made before the game of this kind of stat that Lukaku's never scored against Bonucci and Chiellini from open play. And of course, he didn't again, but he definitely had chances, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Lukaku again was slightly frustrated apart from the penalty. And a kind of counter stat to the stat you just mentioned is that I think this was the fifth match in a row where he scores against Donnarumma.
Hang on.
Who?
You just named an Italian goalkeeper.
Sorry.
I thought Italy had been playing without a goalkeeper for this tournament. But
this is quite a big moment.
So given that the performance from young Gigio, and given that the more I talk right now, the more zeros are added to his bank account, I think it's worthwhile speaking about the fact that he's really grown in this tournament. And his two or three saves in the match against Belgium were ultimately crucial. Obviously, he had a great performance along with the whole team, I should say. There was very few players that you could say had a dud match. Perhaps the one that sticks to mind immediately is Ciro Immobile. But beyond him, we may talk about a little bit more in depth in a minute. Beyond him, I thought most of the team performed to their maximum potential. And even the guys who came in off the bench got their job done. I particularly like Berardi playing what was essentially a 15-minute cameo and managing to get booked and doing everything to frustrate Belgium. But for me, the highlight of the game was, without doubt, the Insigne goal, which was, if you told me Insigne is going to score a goal in the quarterfinal and you wouldn't have told me what goal it was, I would have imagined the goal to be exactly that goal.
He only scores one goal, but it is a great, great goal. So, I'm glad you've come to the acceptance stage of grief, Boaz.
I've just figured out I have two games left with him, more or less, this season, and then I don't have to see him for a few months. And as you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder or whatever. So I'm sure as soon as the season starts, I'll move on from this petty gripe of mine.
Yeah, I just wanted to come back actually on what Boaz said there on a serious point, actually, and I'd love to claim this as my own. I'd also love to give credit to the person that I saw who mentioned this on Twitter, but unfortunately, I wasn't paying that much attention. But it was said that, which I think is completely true, that the great thing about what we've seen so far in this Italy team is that you cannot pick one player and say that is the star, that is going to be the man of the match, because we've seen so many of these players have the potential to step up and be that player. Equally, Boaz just mentioned Berardi. He didn't have the greatest game last time round, was great off the bench here. Chiesa perhaps didn't have the greatest game against Belgium, but was great in the second round game against Austria. So really, it seems to be that you cannot pick out a danger man from this Italy team, because just about everyone in this squad, even not even in the sort of first 11, has the potential to be really, really special on their day. And in this case, it was Insigne. And oh my word, what a goal that was.
Yeah, for sure. And Boaz mentioned just there how well Berardi did in frustrating the Belgians at the end. I'm going to admit that the crowd I was watching it with were getting pretty upset, or at least apologetic if they were supporting the Italians, about the time wasting antics at the end. I know it's probably been overdone in certain sections of the media, but it did seem a bit shameless at some points, didn't it, Kenny?
I'm not sure I buy that, to be honest. In terms of time wasting, I mean, some of the things that the crowd in the ground at least were kind of calling out as time wasting. I mean, one of them was Spinazzola, who we'll get onto in a minute, who is out of football for a very, very lengthy period of time. Another one that the commentators over here in the UK seemed to think was perfectly fair was when I think it was Witzel who just double forearm smashed Belotti in the face. And they were like, I don't really see anything wrong with that. And then 2 minutes later, cue footage of Belotti walking around with a massive shiner to the right eye, I believe it was. In terms of time wasting, I mean, come on. Like, how many Champions League games have we watched where this goes on? At the top level, you do what you have to win. I even, as a St. Mirren fan, I even remember St. Mirren beating Celtic, and this was a very rare occasion, 4-0 about 10 years ago or something. And at the end of that game, St. Mirren just spent the whole time just like, yeah, just wasting time, basically. And of course, the crowd were lapping it up. This goes on all over football. This was a very, very close match. Belgium were very, very dangerous opponents, and Italy did what they had to do to cross the line, really. I mean, there are other comic moments in the game, such as Immobile's incredible recovery, let's say.
What was it? His brother called it an ostrich impression.
He did, after he got up and ran over to celebrate with the rest of the team like an ostrich, as one of Buzz's brothers said in a WhatsApp group we're in, which is very, very funny, because, I mean, that is exactly what he looked like. But I mean, there is like a serious point to be made here as well. I think that quite often there are things that defensively players can get away with, which are, I mean, if we're going to say, why are we letting people get away with cheating? Well, professional fouls, holding people back when they're breaking through, you know, on a counter attack, and they get applauded for taking one for the team. But when it's an attacker who either accentuates contact, because otherwise he's not going to get a free kick. I mean, maybe Mobilo is a bit of an extreme example, but in general, you know, when players go down easily, they're criticized for it. Well, if they stay up, 9 times out of 10, they don't get the free kick. And why should the defender benefit from that would be my take. So I'm not sure I buy all of this thing about Italy time wasting, and I certainly am not having it from any of the other top five nations that they don't do it as well, because we see it all the time in the Champions League from all nations, and I include those that are vocally more against this than others.
Yeah, maybe it's just kind of a tribute to the fact that Italy are one of the best coach teams and they're kind of the most effective at doing it in a coordinated and organized fashion towards the final whistle. But yeah, I mean, in my opinion, they ought to just change the rules and stop the clock when the ball's out of play. I mean, I know it's a big one to throw open and maybe not a good discussion point for this podcast.
That's actually one of my bugbears for several years. I really think that football should introduce a running clock like in basketball. But then you'll see that all teams waste time equally and that essentially we're only really watching about 50 minutes of football all through the whole match. And we choose to remember the last 15 minutes of the Italy game, but this kind of thing happens in the 90 minutes. As soon as the team goes up, whether that team is Italy, Belgium, or England, the only team that seemed to forget how to do this was Denmark, who were in a rush to continue playing despite leading 2-1 against the Czech Republic. But that's maybe for our sister Danish pod. But if I've got to be honest, I think it's super professional to do that. Italy are kings at killing the game. There was 5 minutes of added time, and let's be honest, 2 minutes of that was played. And why wouldn't you do that if you're in the lead? I mean, it's horribly naive to say, oh, I wouldn't do that in the same situation. There's a semifinal of a Euro on the line. I applaud it. But more to the point, as Kenny mentioned, there were many, many occasions where a foul was actually a foul, where including actually, let's get onto it, that Immobile occasion. All the funny replays on Twitter and Match of the Day in the UK are showing just the end of their move. But if you see, the Italian TV showed a close-up of Immobile's foot, and he gets a real big kick on that foot. So, I mean, of course, he makes a meal of it. He rolls around, but what's he supposed to be? Keep rolling around when his team just scored a goal? What's the point? Like it's clear he's rolling around to accentuate the fact that he's been kicked, but the action is over. He's moved on.
And I think, in fairness, VAR would have awarded that penalty had Barella not gone on to score what was an absolutely fantastic goal. Which brings me to another point, which is, why are we focusing on this rather than not us in this podcast, but why is the global footballing community focusing on that rather than two absolutely glorious goals and an incredible performance by a team playing football the way everyone always claims football should be played? And it happens to be a team that is always criticized for, so say, playing negative football. And even when they play this level of football and score goals like this, people just want to focus on stuff like that. And it gets to a point where you just have to say that perhaps other countries that don't have 4 World Cups have a bit of a chip in their shoulder.
Yeah, I was about to say I can agree with you for now, but if it happens at the weekend and there's a country I care about involved, I'm gonna go full English pundit on the on the follow-up episode. But yeah, I can definitely accept what you're saying for now. And as I said, I was watching the Finnish coverage, so I didn't see what I'm sure was some ridiculous exaggeration on the BBC. Other news services are available.
Something that we should really highlight, because it kind of goes missing in all this talk about time wasting, is what an incredible defensive performance the whole back line put up. Maybe Di Lorenzo was a little bit naive in giving away the penalty, although I don't think that was a penalty, to be honest. I thought that was quite soft. But in any case, Spinazzola, as well as The Rocks, Chiellini and Bonucci, were all immense. And as was demonstrated by Spinazzola clearing a ball off the line miraculously. I'm not sure what happened there.
Oh, that was glorious.
And all of them high-fiving like they just scored a World Cup final goal. But in any case, maybe we want to talk about that penalty a little bit, Kenny.
I mean, I think it was a penalty. Much as I didn't want it to be a penalty, I think that there's one particular angle that shows that very clearly. Di Lorenzo shoves him with his forearm in the back. And I get that it wasn't the strongest shove in the world, but I mean, the guy is coming up to the byline. He's changing direction. He's slightly off balance. He's moving at speed. I think that's all it takes to send someone flying. And to be honest, I mean, it was a push. He pushed him. I think anywhere else in the pitch, it's a free kick. And for me, it was... As much as I didn't want it to be a penalty, it was a penalty.
So I think the defender is foolish to give the referee an option in this case. And of course, I do think he does shove him, But I think the subsequent fall is not a result of him being shoved, but rather him seeing the ball going out of bounds and kind of tripping himself over. So again, I wouldn't necessarily give it, but since you said if it had happened anywhere else on the pitch, he would have given it. It's quite funny because towards the end of the game, I can't remember who exactly, but De Bruyne kind of pushed / elbowed someone off the pitch and a foul was given. And it was a little bit more violent than the penalty foul, but he was complaining that the Italian player had dived. And so, you know, I guess you always see things through your own team's lenses.
I was going to say, if that's a foul, then I'd be giving away penalties every time I played the game.
But I arguably think that De Bruyne gave away a penalty as well in that game. But I mean,
oh yeah, that was a. I didn't see a replay of it, but he just tripped him. More.
And this is a media agenda. That's why you didn't see the replay, because it doesn't fit the narrative that Italy dive and da da da.
I saw a replay, in fairness, and it did look like a penalty in replay as well. He just stuck the knee in him. I mean, yeah, not really.
It's
much.
Good thing we have VAR.
I was surprised that there was no VAR review. I mean, I'm sure it was reviewed, but there was no little icon saying that it was being VAR reviewed.
I guess it had the get out of not being clear and obvious.
Yeah, possibly. Anyway, we should just take a second to offer our condolences to Spinazzola, who it looks like will play no further part in this tournament. Horrible injury on his Achilles. Kenny, you mentioned that it was one of the fouls that was actually booed for time wasting at the in the stadium. But he's had a great tournament, Spinazzola, hasn't he? It's really sad to see him missing out.
It's really, really sad to see him missing out. For me, he's been the player of the tournament so far, and I don't think I'm seeing that with Italian glasses on. I think that has been widely recognized throughout, certainly here in the UK. It's one of the areas that Italy have been given credit. He's been absolutely tremendous, and it's really, really sad that his tournament has ended that way. But I think today he seemed in slightly better spirits. I mean, I think as much as anything, the tears that we saw at the end of that were more emotion at the realization that his tournament was over than the pain, although I'm sure the pain was pretty severe as well. But yeah, it's just really, really, really sad, but good to see that today he's been photographed post-successful operation. So just, yeah, hope he gets well soon and is back flying down that left flank for Roma next season under his new boss, Mourinho.
Yeah, I should just highlight that surgery actually took place in Finland, not too far from where I am in Helsinki. It's actually in the city of Turku. And the surgery was performed by Sakari Araba, who is a sports surgeon at Turku's hospital. And one of the leading surgeons in this kind of thing. He's also done Cristante's quite recently. So, yeah, all the best to him. And we'd just like to highlight that I've been giving Spinazzola's honorables all season for his performances in a Roma shirt. Buzz, do you have something to add?
So apparently Spinazzola is going to be in the stadium for the match against Spain. It's kind of testament to the team spirit that Mancini has built here. There was some lovely footage on social media where the Italian players, first of all, there was footage of Spinazzola coming into their breakfast area. But essentially he hugged and kind of said his goodbyes to every single player of the squad. And it was just really emotional. And then there was also footage of players on the plane to the next match, and Bernardeschi leading the way on the plane microphone. I guess that's why they brought him to this tournament. But he's the one who's kind of giving it to being the cheerleader with the whole team going crazy. It's lovely scenes, and it's maybe this will give Italy that extra bit of motivation. But undoubtedly, it's a big loss for any team.
Absolutely. And speaking of motivation, we should discuss the next challenge that they face. Obviously, Italy playing Spain in the semi-final, what is, as we record, tomorrow night. It's a big game, and we have got a very special scouting report for you from our friend Angel. He is a Spanish journalist, a lifelong Madrid fan, as you may be able to deduce from some of his comments.
I have to admit that I'm a Real Madrid fan. for a Real Madrid fan, we are not too crazy about this Spanish national team, because it's the first time, I think, in 75 years that the coach didn't take any Real Madrid player. At the beginning, I thought, okay, Real Madrid player who can be selected for the national team didn't have a good year. But for example, Nacho, who is a defender, he's really good. He ended up the season really well, and Luis Enrique didn't select him. Like I say, a lot of fans of Real Madrid are not happy with the national team. First, because Luis Enrique is not a coach that is very engaging. People don't love him much. Also, we are not crazy about the national team because we are a little bit spoiled for the last, you know, 5 or 6, 7 years when we won the World Cup and the Euro Cup twice. Right now, the new generation, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong and they will win the European Cup, but I doubt it. Like in Spain, people are not too excited about the national team, although since they made it to the semifinal, well, right now, everybody thinks, well, it's a great opportunity because they can win the tournament. But being realistic, Italy will be the first team, well, it will be the first decent team that we play with in this tournament, because let's review what Spain did. We beat 5-0 to Slovakia, that is probably one of the worst teams in the Euro Cup. We tied with Sweden and with Poland. We beat Croatia, and I think Croatia was not great, and even we needed extra time to beat Croatia, and we were winning 3-1, and they tied like 7 minutes to the having 7 minutes to the end of the game. And like I say, it's not the best Croatia. It's probably one of the worst Croatia of the last 5 years. And then with Switzerland, we also needed to go to the penalties, playing with one more player for almost 50 minutes, and we didn't win. We beat Switzerland in the penalties. So bottom line is that people are excited because Spain is in the semifinal, but we are not too crazy about it. Is Luis Miguel meeting or exceeding expectation? Well, yes, because we didn't expect to go so far. And it's surprisingly for everyone to know that we can go to the final if we win Italy. But again, I don't think we will beat Italy. The forecast for the Italy game, I think Spain will lose. Italy have been more regular and also stronger. Italy, I definitely will win and will qualify. I hope I'm wrong because I want Spain to qualify, but in Spain, people don't have too much hope. And also, if you compare Spain to the other two teams playing the other semifinal, England and Denmark, I think both teams, England and Denmark, they are better than Spain. And the other question is, any players that Spain have that could be future stars? I only will say Pedri, who plays for Barcelona. I think he's the only one who I will say that could be a good star. But right now in Spain, what is happening is that we use the title of star to any young player, and later on, it is very disappointing. We had that with Asensio, who played for the Real Madrid, who everybody thought he was going to be a big star. He didn't even make it to the national team. And Morata. Morata is really funny. If you look for memes of Morata on internet, you will find a lot of them. I don't know. I mentioned it to you. I'm a Real Madrid fan. And Morata came back twice to Madrid after having a experience with other team. He never made it. He fights a lot in the team. He show a lot of effort. He's a great team player. But if you are a striker, you need to score goals. And he doesn't score goals. Nobody understands in Spain why he's the Spanish striker, and he plays all the games when he only, I think he scored a good goal against Croatia, but he missed so many. So I'm not a fan of Morata, and there are people in Spain who don't like Morata. And bottom line is he started as a Real Madrid, young Real Madrid player, and Real Madrid sold it to Chelsea. He went to Atletico, and Atletico didn't want him either. And then when Atletico or Real Madrid don't want a player, it's probably because he's not very good.
Thanks again to Angel, not mincing his words at all there in his assessment of Spain's chances. Should be said, Italy versus Spain will be the most played match in European Championship and World Cup history after this game. So an historic occasion. Baez, what do you make of it? What did you think of Angel's assessment?
I wouldn't be so quick to dismiss Spain simply because they are Spain after all. Obviously, in this tournament, they took a little bit of time to get going. They had that match against Sweden where they had like 84% possession or something like that, but couldn't get a goal. But it looked like towards the latter stages of the group, they were starting to find their way. Undoubtedly, they're going to be a little bit tired from going to extra time two times in a row. And the fact that they struggled against a Switzerland side that Italy were quite quick to dismiss bodes well for the Azzurri. I think this is going to be a midfield battle overall. And in this tournament, especially, I wouldn't bet against Jorginho, Verratti and Barella, who in my mind have been formidable.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say as well that Italy have also struggled in this tournament. You know, the game against Austria, maybe not showing them at their best. And you can only beat who's in front of you. So, I mean, hopefully it'll still be an interesting game. What's your take on it, Kenny?
I think Spain have actually looked quite good, despite the fact that they struggled for goals at the start of the tournament. Undoubtedly, still a very, very talented side. Yes, to Angel's fury, there might not be any Real Madrid players in that squad, but undoubtedly a very talented group of footballers. I think, as Boaz suggested, it kind of depends on what Spain shows up. And I think, as you suggested, Oscar, it kind of depends on what Italy shows up as well. I would not be in the slightest bit complacent. Again, I hark back to what Joris said in the preview for the Belgium game. I think everything's 50-50 for here on in, on this side of the draw anyway. It's going to be very, very nervy. And if Italy start the way they did against Belgium and can sustain that, then that I think Italy have every chance of going through. But it's definitely not going to be a walk in the park. One thing that I would say goes in Italy's favour probably is the fact that for that Wales game, the last game of the groups, they did manage to rotate eight players. And as Boaz highlighted, Spain have gone to extra time twice. So, you know, I think that Italy should have a little bit more in their legs. And certainly the way that the high press and everything that they've been playing under Mancini, recovering the ball quickly, that's something that they're absolutely going to need. I think it's too close to call, but I'm optimistic, I think, going into it.
Yeah, Kenny, let me just tell you that it is nervy on both sides of the bracket. But yeah, there's been a lot of talk about Morata, both on previous episodes of this podcast and in Angel's remarks there. But what do we think about the point of the Italian attack? Do we expect Belotti to start against Spain, or is Mancini going to stick with Immobile?
In my mind, Mancini should and will stick with Immobile. I think overall he's a better player. It's hard to say that because he's not really had a chance to shine in this tournament, and besides the two goals, he's contributed very little. But I think that Belotti, at least in his Italy form, is more of an impact sub, and he also seems a little bit heavy. I don't know if that's because he hasn't been getting much playtime or whatever. You have to bet on Immobile to come good at some point, because after all, he's a guy who bags 20 plus goals a season. His understanding with Verratti and Insigne, especially, who he played with at Pescara many years ago, you can't buy that.
Yeah, and I think one thing that actually probably Boaz's words there kind of echo a little bit what Mancini said, but I just wanted to highlight something that he said in his press conference today and on the eve of the game, which was that the players that are usually written off and that are usually criticized, who have the sort of pedigree that Immobile has, let's not forget that he was Europe's Golden Boot winner a year ago, tend to be the ones that prove people wrong and tend to be the ones that come good in the end. So here's hoping that is the case. Undoubtedly, if Italy can get the best out of Immobile, then that they will be unstoppable.
And perhaps in this COVID era, it is kind of a little bit wrong to think about a football team as just in terms of a starting 11. Italy have shown it throughout the tournament that with five subs and a possible six, if you go to extra time, you can really make an impact on the game and bring on some fresh legs that will completely switch the game around. So I think Immobile, whether he has a good game or a bad game, he does a good job at kind of tiring out defenders and making a lot of runs, even though, as I said in a past episode, his close control has been very disappointing. But as part of a mechanism, as part of a bigger unit, he gets the job done. A bigger question mark will be who will replace Pinazzola on the left for me.
Emerson Palmieri, surely, I would think.
That scares me.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to wait and see.
He hasn't played many games at Chelsea this year, more than anything else. But also, I mean, it's definitely a downgrade. But touching on what I just said, probably again, Italy work as a whole. It's not, there's no real individual in this squad.
Yeah. Anyway, let's hope those remarks from Mancini apply more to Immobile than they do to Morata, who's obviously looking for his own redemption story. Scored a good goal, but still has probably missed more than he's taken this tournament.
I'd like to give you some quick stats about this game, just because you just mentioned Morata, and it's really worth mentioning that both Gerard Moreno and Morata have an XG of above 3.5 for this tournament. As far as I'm aware, Moreno has not scored any goals, and Morata's got two, so obviously they're being very wasteful. Also, Spain is kind of a bogey team for Italy. Italy have only won two of their last 14 games, so it's one of those situations. However, Italy have won five games in a row so far, and if they should win against Spain, that's their record in a major tournament. They've never won more than six games. So there's that, another record for Mancini's boys to break. And one final point is that this will be Spain's third semi out of the last four tournaments. So they're perennial challengers in this tournament.
That's interesting. So presumably the tournaments that Italy have won before, they've always lost a game in the groups or drawn a game in the groups.
Yeah, the only exception is Italy 90, where they reached the semi-final winning five games and unfortunately lost.
Good stuff. Okay, yeah, as I said, we're all really looking forward to that game. And regardless, win or lose, we will be back to talk about it afterwards. But let's just move away from the Euros briefly to round up what else is going on in Italian football, what has been going on in Italian football this week. Firstly, a signing for Atalanta, Kenny, Musso, which you've put down here as seriously, seriously good. Anything to add to that?
No, just the it's definitely an upgrade. I think Musso is a keeper that just about every top team in Serie A had their eyes on. And I mean, it's yeah, a big upgrade for Atalanta in the goalkeeping department. So if they continue with signings of that standard, then who knows, they could push on perhaps.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing him next season. Other Serie A news, we should announce that the calendar for the first time is asymmetric. All other leagues already have an asymmetric calendar. So it just means that if you play somebody on the first game of the season, you don't necessarily play them on the last game of the season. Also, Jose Mourinho has been presented to the fans at Roma. There was apparently a big turnout for this. But I find it difficult to believe.
It's like an emperor. He's waving to the crowd and they're going mental.
Yeah. And speaking of which, Hakimi looked very happy on the plane as he left on his way to PSG to join your boy Gigi Buzz. What else do we have in transfer news? Looks like Milan have reached an agreement with Brescia over Tonali to make him into a permanent transfer. Sounds like the players actually agreed to a pay cut. Not sure if that's warranted based on this season's performance, but we could maybe discuss that another time. Di Lorenzo has extended his contract with Napoli. And Parma's Deversa has been announced, or former Parma player Deversa has been announced at Sampdoria. Paul Lopez of Roma has joined Marseille, or it looks to be joining Marseille. He's had a medical. Tana Demirspor, who have recently been promoted to the Super League in Turkey, might be signing Mario Balotelli from Monza. I assume that he's still contracted there.
Apparently, Monza have decided not to renew his contract. And you have to think, in a parallel universe, Immobile is being challenged for his spot by Balotelli in this semi-final, and Balotelli gets the nod.
Yeah, definitely would have been plausible 4 or 5 years ago, wouldn't it? And finally, Roma have announced that Cengiz Under has moved to Olympique Marseille. So potentially quite a big miss for them. Anyway, that's all in our Serie A roundup. It's time for some honourable and dishonourable mentions. Starting off with an honourable mention for the Azzurri Twitter admin, who responded to a tweet from the Belgian Federation's account, which had Veni Vidi with a picture of Lukaku and De Bruyne as gladiators fighting off some of the Italian players. And the Azzurri account responded with Vici, as in we won after the game. Excellent stuff.
Finish him!
Kenny, speaking of finishing them, you wanted to give one to Denmark's Mela for his goal.
Denmark and Atalanta's Mela for his assist. In that last game for Denmark. Atalanta have been taking this tournament by storm. I've been doing my utmost not to highlight it, but this assist with the outside of his foot, just on a plate for Denmark's winner, absolutely deserves an honourable mention. And he's been one of if I was saying that Spinazzola has been the star of the tournament, for me, Mele has been one of the breakout stars of this tournament. All of a sudden, everyone around Europe is kind of taking note of his quality. And he only joined Atalanta 6 months ago, but he's been an absolute revelation.
It's worth noting that of the 8 teams in the quarterfinals, 5 had Atalanta players in their squad.
Yeah, should we highlight the sending off that an Atalanta player had just to balance things out?
It still hurts.
Surprised us all by naming the Italian goalkeeper earlier in the podcast. Now you're going to give him an honourable mention.
I'm really breaking my embargo here by giving an honourable mention to Gigio Donnarumma, not for his great performance against Belgium, which we spoke about earlier, but rather because, A, he got me one of my most successful tweets in the last 6 months or so, when I tweeted a picture of him and Verratti and said, bring your kid to work day. But more to the point, Verratti was being interviewed by an Italian TV journalist, I believe, and Donnarumma was acting as the interpreter for him. And eventually Donnarumma looked at him, he's like, but he's talking Italian, like, why don't you understand him? Hilarious scenes.
Indeed. I just wanted to give an honourable to Joris, who Kenny mentioned earlier, obviously our Belgian scout last week, just for highlighting Doku, who as a potential young prospect, I don't think any of us were expecting him to start the game, but he did. He was perhaps Belgium's greatest attacking threat, and of course won the penalty for Belgium's goal. So well done to Joris for his excellent insight. Buzz, on the topic of journalists, I think this is a dishonorable.
I mean, this is a dishonorable to Italian journalist Donatella Scarlatti, who unfortunately had a slip of mind, I guess we can call it. And while she was interviewing Barella, who is born in 1997, she asked him what his memories were of Italy 90. And and apart from the fact that this was an interview question that had been prearranged a few weeks in advance, so I mean, she had a little bit of time to do her homework. But more to the point, Barella's answer was quite funny because he didn't say, I wasn't born yet, but he said, I was minus 7 then, which is very specific. The reason it's not a complete dishonorable is because Donatella Scarnati went out on Twitter the next day and put out a really heartfelt apology and said that she had a slip of mind, but obviously she doesn't think that Barella is now 37. So, I mean, it's nice to see her take responsibility, but it still caused a lot of lulls.
Yeah, indeed. And Kenny, you've got a dishonorable as well.
Yeah, I've got a dishonorable for Fiorentina. It might seem a bit harsh, this, because quite a few Italian clubs have been guilty of it, but none more so than Fiorentina, really, to my mind. Obviously, the 1st of July represents a lot of players coming to the end of their contracts and being released by clubs. But basically, Fiorentina's Twitter feed since that day has been nothing other than a couple of happy birthdays and then just like this fire sale, this cold-hearted fire sale. Photograph of player, thank you, bye. Photograph of player, thank you, bye. So yeah, just I don't know, might have been nice to have a little bit more context around it. And
football is a cold business.
Maybe for it to seem a little bit less that like something that had just been set up 3 months ago when they decided not to renew these players' contracts as like scheduled tweets, basically.
Yeah, as I was saying earlier, it's like Apu from The Simpsons with a thank you, come again. But Boaz, maybe you want to just give us one more dishonorable for good luck.
Is this a dishonorable? Is it an honorable? I was quite amused to see the Copa America matches being promoted with the faces of the leading players from each team in the tournament. So you have obviously Messi and Neymar because they are superstars. And then you have our boy Muriel representing Colombia, of course. But then La Padula is in that image representing Peru and clearly a slight drop in class, in style. Kudos to him because he only declared for Peru about a year ago. But here he is as part of the graphics department of the Copa America.
Yeah, and with his tattoo. Was his tattoo in there?
He didn't have his Native American tattoo to represent his Peruvian roots.
His blood, his culture, his history, or not.
Yeah, that will never not be funny. So thanks for bringing that to our attention. That is all we've got time for this week. We'll be back to speak to you, hopefully, about for a preview of the European Championships final. But if not, we'll be back to speak to you anyway.
That's tragic.
Yeah, that's all for now. If you don't already, please do subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your audio.
We'll speak to you later in the week. Until then, enjoy the Euros.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.